What is kayfabe?
Kayfabe is an arcane term that refers to everything that is fake in professional wrestling. It goes back to the carnival days of the early 1900s and probably the late 1800s when professional wrestling was still passing itself off as a legitimate endeavor. And so wrestlers would use the term kayfabe in conversation with each other to talk about stuff that wasn't real and to sort of tip each other off to, you know, what was fiction and what was fact without cluing the audience in on what was real and what wasn't.
Hello and welcome to The Right Question, a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the Western United States. Our funding comes from Humanities Montana and members of Montana Public Radio. I'm Sarah Aronson, and though I've never been drawn to professional wrestling or the graphic novel form, I decided to take a chance and sit down with Chad Dundas to discuss Undertaker, his graphic novel based on the fictional life of the very real professional wrestler by the same stage name. Don't go away. Let's address the critics right off the bat. Is professional wrestling fake or not?
Well, professional wrestling is certainly scripted, and the outcomes are predetermined. And like the athletic performance that you see is certainly not competition-based. So I guess I'm inclined to say that it's fake, but at the same time, the people who are doing it are incurring real injuries.
Yeah.
Because there's just some stuff that you can't fake. So the fallout from it can be real. And I guess a lot of whether or not you consider it to be real or fake probably has to do with whether or not you think sport has to be competition-based. Because they're not having a competition, but at the same time, if someone goes out rock climbing or rowing or even playing golf by themselves, not necessarily having a competition, but they're still doing sport.
You wrote the script for a graphic novel based on the WWE megastar Undertaker. And that is the stage name for Mark William Calloway, who's noted as the greatest professional wrestler of all time. Can you tell me why this subject seemed like the subject for your book?
Sure. I had become acquaintances with a guy named Chris Rosa, who is a senior editor at the comic book company Boom Studios that has a contract with World Wrestling Entertainment to handle all of their comic book products. And we had been talking for a while because he had read my novel, Champion of the World, which is also about wrestling, and he liked it. And he kept kind of like pitching me ideas to write graphic novels for Boom Studios. And I kept having to tell him no, basically, just because my schedule wouldn't permit me to do it. I just didn't have time to do it. And then he offered me The Undertaker. And I thought, number one, if I say no to this, they're going to stop asking me. Mm-hmm. And number two, The Undertaker was my favorite wrestler when I was 13. So
you had to.
It was kind of like an offer I couldn't refuse. The opportunity to like contribute in a really small way to the existing canon about this character was an opportunity for me to like indulge my nerdy preteen brain in a fit of nostalgia and kind of like bring that up to date with the writing that I do now. So it was almost like I couldn't tell them no.
And there was actually a series written about Undertaker in like the late 90s, early 2000s already. Explain the resurgence.
Well, the WWE is launching a series of graphic novels that are all going to be about different longtime stars of theirs through this comic book company, Boom Studios. And they wanted Undertaker to be the first one. I don't know why they chose Undertaker for the first one, but he's sort of like a fitting subject for fictionalization and graphic novels in particular. He's an undead superhero in and of himself almost. So I think that he made sense for them as a first subject to sort of launch this series. And again, it was like long-term one of my favorites from when I was a kid. So it was just made perfect sense for me to say yes and take on the responsibility of writing it.
What did you love about him when you were 13?
He was so different than anyone else who was in the WWF landscape at the time, and I was like kind of a goth punk rock kid to begin with. So he debuts as this undead Western mortician type character, and he was just this massive human who was so unique and such like a good performer that I was drawn to his kind of like macabre, supernatural vibe immediately. And a lot of people were, frankly. And he sort of like spoke to me directly as like a weird punk rock 13-year-old, I guess.
In the book itself is the origin story of a superhero. Like that's how it reads to me is, you know, we meet Undertaker as a child. What can you just say about professional wrestlers in general? What lures them to the sport, and what do they have to have sort of in their psychic makeup to do this kind of work?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I was a kid, like obviously I was really taken with the spectacle of the whole thing. But as I've grown up, I've become more interested in different aspects of wrestling, certainly the history of professional wrestling, which is totally twisted and weird. But also, like you said, the notion of this thing is so strange. Like, why would anyone want to do this? And indeed, like the personal stories of professional wrestlers are often kind of fascinating because almost no one sets out in life and is like, I'm going to become a professional wrestler. Everyone is like, I'm going to be a basketball star, or I'm going to be a gymnast, or I'm going to be a football player. And for one reason or another, they wind up working as professional wrestlers. But at the same time, the job itself is so physically demanding and grueling that you kind of have to love it. You have to have a true passion for it, or you're not going to rise to the top, and certainly you won't be there for very long. So the sort of real physical stakes coupled with the more performative aspects of it make it fascinating to me. And it honestly draws people from a lot of different walks of life. But at the same time, I think that you need to have that passion. You clearly need to have the athletic ability to do it. And you have to be kind of a con man above and beyond all that. So for me, as like a fiction writer, that's the perfect cocktail.
Let's talk about the content of the book itself. One of the lines you write early on is, as years passed, the nightmare began to define the man. What nightmare?
Well, the story of The Undertaker is that his parents die in this terrible fire that we ultimately come to learn was started by his brother. And so he's trying to sort of outrun the loss of his family and the baggage that goes along with that by turning to this, you know, hyper-violent combat sport style competition, hoping that, you know, that will make him feel whole again. And ultimately, I don't think it necessarily does. So I guess the nightmare that he is either running from or plunging himself headlong into, depending on how you look at it, is probably just that childhood memory of losing his family in such horrific fashion.
Right, and he's taken into the care of this character, Paul Bearer. Mm-hmm. Can you just talk about that character?
Sure. So one of the things that interested me about this project to begin with was sort of like trying to bring a human side to these characters that already have almost 30 years of televised storylines built up around them. So one of the challenges and one of the joys, I guess, of writing this thing was to try to illuminate the sort of human side story that would happen outside of what you saw on television. And certainly Paul Bearer is a sort of cartoonish figure in the WWE world who is himself positioned as this mortician character who was The Undertaker's manager slash valet and sort of like a father figure for him throughout his career. And so one of the human relationships that I really wanted to explore in the book was between The Undertaker and Paul Bearer, who assumes this sort of like chaperone slash parent slash controlling figure in The Undertaker's life. So he is one of the more interesting characters to kind of dabble in because while he represents like this great direction in The Undertaker's life, kind of pushing him into this lifestyle, he's also clearly out for his own best interests. So he's like another perfect character to sort of try to bring to life in a comic book.
And we can't forget about Kane. Kane is Undertaker's brother, but they became separated after the death of their parents. What's the primary dilemma between Undertaker and Kane?
the primary dilemma, I suppose, is that Kane killed their parents. And so The Undertaker has this, again, like a human story of wanting to reconnect with his sibling, but at the same time having to have it in this very fraught and over-the-top world of professional wrestling where they're sort of constantly reconnecting and then falling out and reconnecting and falling out. And so I feel like they really want to be brothers and best friends, but the lives that they've both chosen kind of won't let them find that peaceful harmony.
Chad, I'm not going to lie to you. I really enjoyed sitting down with this graphic novel. And part of what struck me is some of the powerful moments in the book. Like, there's this scene when they're sorting out Undertaker's name. And, you know, one of the bubbles is like, the mortician, the mutilator. And then his thought bubble appears. And it says, no, I know who I am. I know my name. What was it like for you to write your way through those, like moments of initiation and finding oneself?
Right. Well, the project itself was kind of like pure fun for me. And so like all of those little moments of discovery that I was ultimately able to build into the script as I went along were delightful for me, just because I was able to kind of like play around with this childhood obsession of mine and kind of bring some new light to it. And at the same time, maybe find these little pockets of legitimate artistic inspiration to kind of bring those moments to the story. And honestly, it's also kind of like an Easter egg for hardcore professional wrestling fans who know how decisions get made behind the scenes by the people who actually, you know, control the storylines and figure out what the characters are going to be called, in that lots of things do, in fact, happen at the last minute on the fly, and they will spend weeks and months, you know, with focus groups and brainstorming sessions trying to name a particular character, only to have someone swoop in at the last minute and be like, no, The Undertaker. And then that's what the guy's called for the next 30 years.
Right.
So it's both like a plot point and kind of a fun moment of inspiration, and also sort of like a wink to the backstage politics of wrestling.
I was going to say, it appeals to both ends of the spectrum, right?
Well, I'm like, frankly, that's one of the things that is kind of appealing and fascinating to me as a writer about a thing that is as goofy and often maligned as professional wrestling. Like, it legitimately does do this thing, even if it does it in an over-the-top cartoonish way, where it blurs this line between reality and fiction, sometimes in a way that is easy to identify and sometimes in a way that the people involved in it don't even fully understand, like, where the line between what's real and what's not is. And so even though it's like a matinee for kids in a way, to me, there are aspects of it that are legitimately fascinating from an artistic standpoint.
Agreed. The other thing I didn't realize is I'm sitting down with a graphic novel expecting to be entranced by the graphics, but what I realize is that it's really an auditory, you know, because there's a lot of dialogue and there's a lot of emphasis on the words. Mm-hmm. And so I could hear the conversations in my head, which to me was compelling. Did you have different voices going, and could you hear the qualities of these voices and the tones?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the interesting things about contributing to someone else's existing intellectual property, which is not necessarily something I've ever done before, and even not necessarily something I've ever thought of doing before they offered me this job. But once you get into it, yeah, like, you're writing about characters that have existed on the screen for 3 or 4 decades. So if you are familiar with them as the writer, you definitely try to channel their spirit and hear their words in your head as you write, and try to be true to their personalities and how their characters speak on screen. And so, yeah, there was definitely an aspect of it where I tried to be both realistic and true to what these characters had done in the past. And frankly, that allowed for a lot of kind of being totally camp, which was, again, very fun and a new experience for me, which was above and beyond like my own like childhood association with the text. It was just like very interesting as a writer to do this thing that I had never done before and never even thought of. And that was definitely part of it.
I hear this narrator's voice, and I want to read you this one passage. I'm going to see if I can do it justice. But there's something, there's the content of the passage that I want to ask you about. Since his unexpected return, Undertaker seems dead set on disrupting corporate interests in WWE, if not destroying it altogether. Did that really happen? What does that even mean?
Well, so one of the great obstacles about writing this thing is that WWE insisted that it be an entire career retrospective. So essentially, you have to kind of grapple with, no pun intended, 30 years of television professional wrestling storyline, which frankly makes no sense from week to week, let alone over the course of three decades. And so The Undertaker has been involved in a lot of different feuds and a lot of different storylines, some of which sort of cast him as this rebellious figure against like a corporate power structure.
Yeah.
So yeah, that absolutely has happened on WWE TV. And frankly, like from a writer's standpoint, it's always great to be able to fall back on that television announcer who you can use as your Greek chorus and your narrator and anything you need him to say.
Yeah.
Especially if you want it to be super obvious what's going on, just have the television announcer say it in a voiceover.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to a conversation with Chad Dundas about his graphic novel, Undertaker. I'm Sarah Aronson. This is The Right Question. Our full conversation can be found online at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook. The book tackles subjects like destiny, loyalty, and integrity. And I know you've been talking about your childhood, but did you know that you were destined to write about wrestling?
No. God, no. I stumbled upon it, really, even though, like I said, it was a childhood interest of mine, especially as I was like trying to formulate what I was going to write my first novel about, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. It kind of came over me in a flash that I could take this weird, unique thing. You know, for better or worse, I have this deep knowledge about professional wrestling. And so like the moment that I realized that I could use that to create fiction as a more or less serious writer was kind of like an aha moment for me, because it's a knowledge base that I have that a lot of people who buy and read books don't have. So I think that that's a great strength for me to be able to, write about something that is new to other people that to me may in fact seem like kind of old hat.
What was your early writing life like? What did you like to write early on?
Well, I come from a family of writers, frankly. It's one of the only things we can do. I like to tell people I couldn't do math and I couldn't do science. So I didn't have a lot of other options in terms of what I could do to like as a quote unquote career. I was kind of writing my whole life because even as a small kid, I always idolized my big brother who's 3 years older than me. So by the time I was in fifth grade, like he was essentially an eighth grader about ready to head to high school and was, you know, reading Sherlock Holmes and writing all of this like weird mystery stuff. And I wanted to be just like my brother Zach. So I was like, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to read Sherlock Holmes and write weird mysteries and then work for the school newspaper just like he did. And our grandmother was the head librarian for School District 1 here in Missoula for years and years. So she was just like constantly bringing home books, and we had just always had storytellers and readers and writers in our family. And so it was kind of like a thing that I fell into, just as, you know, without thinking about it, just because it was what everybody, I saw everybody around me doing, and, you know, went through the kind of like maturation process that I think every writer does of writing 100 terrible short stories in different workshops, and kind of like trying to figure out a voice and a subject matter that I could write about. And all of that obviously is still a work in progress. But wrote a lot of probably bad, kind of wince-worthy stories, and still do, frankly. Eventually, you know, found a couple of things that worked for longer novel projects, and I guess here we are.
Unrelated to work, do you enjoy watching professional wrestling?
Not really. Not as an adult.
Yeah.
The product itself, especially as we know it on mainstream American television, I feel like is pretty bad. And especially from a writing standpoint, mm-hmm. it just doesn't make sense from week to week. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with the enormous corporation that World Wrestling Entertainment has become. And it has changed the wrestling business in a lot of ways, but particularly that all of the writing, like I said, is done sort of by committee and kind of in focus groups. And, wrestlers have very little creative control anymore about what they say or like who they are as characters, which is directly opposed to how the business worked for years and years, where mm-hmm. you would basically just go out there and make it up for mm-hmm. your, and like, you know, whoever you happen to be, whatever your character happened to be, you would have to make it work. And so like, all of that kind of makes for an uneven product as far as I'm concerned. And, there's a lot of stuff about how WWE does business and how it writes its storylines that are turnoffs for me particularly. But there's also it's almost like music. There's a great and vibrant underground scene mm-hmm. in America. And it's almost like any kind of wrestling that you want to find, you can find it out there right now, especially because there's a huge renaissance of like independent underground professional wrestling in America right now. You can find any style of wrestling that you want to. And some of that stuff does appeal to me as a viewer, but the stuff that is on television week to week, it doesn't really interest me as an adult, kind of. Mm-hmm.
I remember as a child watching American Gladiators, like that was probably the closest I got mm-hmm. to really watching wrestling. And I was trying to think of why do we need these kinds of things? You know, what are we after when we sit down to watch people doing athletics in a theatrical way? You know, whether it's figure skating or wrestling. I actually Googled why wrestling matters. Can you answer that?
That's a hard question. I don't know, you know, what role like sport and spectatorship really plays in our society, but it's clearly a big one and it's clearly a powerful force. And you have people investing lots of their own time and emotional well-being in these things that they essentially don't have any control over, and things that frankly they aren't really a part of, right. but they come to believe that they are a part of it, and they come to, in some cases, base a lot of their personal identity on. And that's a super fascinating aspect of society. And I don't know exactly what need that fulfills, either on an individual basis or, you know, populace-wide, other than in many cases, just like sheer entertainment and sort of like an escape that people come to depend on being able to watch professional football all day on Sunday, just right. because it's the weekend. They don't have to go to work.
Yeah.
They can drink a few beers and watch the football game. And that's a huge part of their like social calendar and a huge part of their recuperation, frankly, or like, you know, recharging for to get ready to have that next week of work. So you would have to ask like a social scientist way smarter than me what all of that means. But it is definitely like a weird wrinkle of our society.
Mm-hmm. Chad, in terms of the graphics, how much collaboration did you have with the primary illustrator, Rodrigo Lorenzo?
You know what? None. One of the things that was super fascinating and interesting for me about doing this project is that it gave me the opportunity to dabble in this form that I had never worked in before. I'd never written a script for anything, really, let alone a comic book. So one of the super gratifying aspects of this job was to write this script, which obviously was just black and white and was just words on the page, and then submit it to the company, and they let Rodrigo Lorenzo, the primary artist of the book, take it from there and like turn this script into this like really fantastic graphic novel. So to see it go from just what I had written to then get the pages sent to me as they were done and see the fully realized finished product was really fun. And it was super like gratifying in a way that I didn't anticipate, and like super exciting in a way that I didn't anticipate, because it was, even though I didn't meet Rodrigo and we didn't speak, like I felt like we collaborated on this thing that is now a physical book in the world that, you know, we neither of us could have done it by ourselves. And so the finished product was really amazing to me. And that was one of the really fulfilling things about the project that I didn't anticipate before doing it, and that I now really appreciate in retrospect.
It's sort of shocking to me as the reader that you didn't have, you know, that somehow you did this work separately, because it marries so well.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, it's writing the script was super interesting, because you do literally have to write it from panel to panel. You have to say what the action is in every panel and then write the dialogue or the narration in every panel. But above and beyond that, like, you do try to give the artist a lot of leeway. Mm-hmm. So you have to walk this really weird line of not being overly descriptive about what is happening,
right,
because you want that person to have their own artistic license to draw it however he wants. But at the same time, like, you want to write it in a way that stimulates the artist's creativity. So you want to, like, make it cool and interesting, but, like, not too fully realized.
Not, like, overstep.
Yeah. Just so, like, the artist is as excited about it as you are, and they, like, can find their own inspiration and sort of make it look like their vision. And, you know, then you put your words on top of it, and so it becomes this hugely collaborative effort, which was a new experience for me and was, like, deeply cool.
Not to ruin it, but at the end of the book, there's a scene where the two brothers, Undertaker and Kane, are hauling firewood together, and Undertaker says, "Life waits for no man." How do you apply that to your life?
Well, certainly the passage of time is writ all over my physical being. I mean, I guess it's if I do want to make a hokey comparison to my own life, like, here is this character that I was fascinated with as a child. He is still around. I have grown up and become a middle-aged father of three, and in many ways have left behind the trifles of youth, and yet can still, like, look at this completely goofy, over-the-top, quote-unquote art form and enjoy it and incorporate it into my professional life, having written this graphic novel. So maybe we're both, me and the Undertaker, we're both still there.
Doing all right.
Keeping on.
Hanging on.
Yeah.
Chad Dundas lives in Missoula, Montana. His debut novel, Champion of the World, was a 2016 Boston Globe Best Book of the Year. Look for more information about his work at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and visit our Facebook page. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting us since 2008. And thanks to you for listening. I'm Sarah Aronson, and this has been The Right Question.
The Right Question is produced by Sarah Aronson, Beth Ann Austin, studio engineer and production assistant. The music in this program was written and performed by John Floridis.